Welcome to episode number 24 of the First Responder Wellness Podcast, the show where we talk about wellness, mental health, leadership, and what it takes to have a wellness culture within your organization. My name is Conrad Weaver, and I hope you're doing well. I hope you're working on the little things that make a big difference in your life. And I hope that you're actually doing those things that propel you forward to the future that you want. Hey, does your public safety agency have a chaplain? Having a chaplain available within your agency can make a huge difference for the first responder professionals you work with. Today on the podcast, I talk with Jim Bontrager, the president of the International Conference of Police Chaplains, and his associate, Ken Schlenker, the assistant director of Region 7 of the ICPC. They share important information on what it takes to be a chaplain within an agency and what's required to put together a chaplaincy program. Stay tuned for this informative discussion. Hey, thanks so much for listening to the podcast. I know you're busy, and I appreciate you taking time to listen to this podcast. I'm also grateful for everyone who's joining us over on YouTube. Thanks for watching. Please be sure to subscribe no matter what channel you watch or listen from. This really helps us get the word out to more people about the show. And if you could please do me a favor, if you appreciate this program and it's making a difference for you, please take a minute to rate and review the show. This would mean the world to me and will help us get the word out to more people. Hey, thanks again for listening and watching. And now here's my conversation with Jim and Ken. Well, Ken and Jim, welcome to the First Responder Wellness Podcast. Thank you both for joining me today. How are you doing?
Awesome.
You know, it's I always tell my officers it's better be seen than viewed. So we're off to a good start.
Well, for the audience, tell me a little bit about who you are and what do you do? So, Ken, if you want to go first, and then we'll pitch it over to Jim.
Well, I'm a master chaplain with the International Conference of Police Chaplains. I am the assistant director for one of our 12 regions, Region 7. We have 2,300 or so chaplains on an international basis, and I assist over six different states. Of which Texas, my home state, is one of them. I sit on a number of different committees for the organization as well, or one of them is education. I'm actually a seminary professor, and I have a nonprofit and wrote the course for the state of California under POST. Peace Officer Standards and Training when I went through their Instructor Development Institute for Master Instructor certification. Mm-hmm. I'm also on the PR committee and a bunch of other special projects for President Bontrager, who I'm just delighted to call as a friend and a leader that I am here to support. So that's me.
And speaking of Mr. Bontrager, would you introduce yourself and who are you and what do you do?
Yes, sir. My name is Jim Bontrager. I'm president of the International Conference of Police Chaplains. As Ken mentioned, we're 2,300 chaplains or so in 14 nations. I've been working with law enforcement going on 30 years in different capacities right now. I've been a law enforcement chaplain since January 2004, and I've dedicated my life full time to trying to bring about health and healing and hope and encouragement for a profession that desperately needs it. So it's great to be with you, sir.
Well, thank you. Thanks to both of you for being here. So tell me a little bit about why chaplaincy in law enforcement is important.
Well, anybody that works with law enforcement knows that, you know, first of all, it's an extremely difficult job and a difficult time in history. And so, you know, we can look at our suicide rates. You know, we've been averaging 2 to 3 officers have killed themselves, you know, versus those who have died from felonious gunfire on average. We can look at, you know, divorce rates. We can look at the challenges of the profession. And so one of the challenges that law enforcement officers have is they just deal with people that are mad, sad, and bad, and who often aren't forthright and coming forth with information and who lie and things like that. And so there's a distrust factor. So one of the challenges to reaching the profession is building relationships that can show that you legitimately care so that you can turn around and, you know, be a resource in their corner. And so I think, you know, chaplaincy, the beautiful thing about chaplaincy is it can be a part of a comprehensive mental health effort because chaplains, first of all, most of us are volunteers, so you don't cost an organization anything. You know, the second thing is we get in there and we have some level of expertise and relationships in the first place, because most are pastors, rabbis, imam, you know, there's some kind of professional capacity. And then if you understand the law enforcement culture and you're trained properly and learn how to exist in it with the nuances of it, you can build the relationships needed to try to help officers to understand what they go through, to be someone in their corner that cares about them, and through time build relationships that can, you know, help facilitate understanding and growth and encouragement, and then also be there as, you know, to help them process the carnage of what they see, and then, you know, if need be, to be an encouragement to bring additional resources in to help them. Mm-hmm.
So, Ken, what are some of the key elements of training a chaplain or someone that perhaps they're even outside the, you know, the law enforcement community? Mm-hmm. What are some of those key elements that you see?
Well, first, let me just give some definitions to things, because I think that there's a lot of times confusion on the difference between being, and I'm going to use this term generically, a pastor. I'm talking about sheikhs, imams, rabbis, priests, pastors. So I'm going to use that term generically. Mm-hmm. But there's a difference between what I would call a philosophy of ministry of being a pastor versus being that of a chaplain. I was a pastor when I was in California for 30 years. I'm a Navy vet and moved to Texas about 7 years ago. So I was both a pastor and a chaplain, and you have to know when to put the right hat on. So as a pastor, people are coming to you within your place of worship. So they're expecting you to lead with whatever your sacred texts are, with this is what it says, and you need to line up your life to that. A chaplain doesn't have people coming to them. A chaplain is in a secular environment fulfilling the mission of the agency that they are serving and not creating any liability for them. So that's what I would call ministry of purpose. The ministry of presence is what Jim was alluding to with the development of relationships with people before something happens, so that it doesn't cause the need for what we would call an intervention. So it doesn't impact them. And then if you have to do an intervention, then you got things after that have to be taken care of. So it's kind of a pre, peri, and post phase. And what we want to do is to help people to deal with getting back to what their peace was. So the chaplain in an interdisciplinary team working with mental health, peer support, and chaplains for a holistic program. And what I mean by that is the physical, emotional, cognitive, behavioral, and spiritual. There's a difference between religion, faith, and spirituality, and people tend to move them all together. Spirituality is transcendent. It's what gives meaning and purpose to an individual's life. Now, for myself and Jim and yourself, most likely our faith is our spirituality. Religion is the way we practice our faith. So when we are functioning as chaplains inside a secular environment, it's not about us. I don't come in as a Jewish or a Christian chaplain. I come in as a chaplain, and I'm meeting people where they are.
So you're not there to proselytize people to come to your particular faith.
No, no. Mm-hmm. Now, if they open the door, then because spirituality is important or faith is important to how they process their life prior to the incident, and they bring it up, the chaplain is uniquely equipped to support them, to help them to get reconnected to where they are coming from. And that's where a lot of people have a misconception and why they tend to not want to have chaplains, which is unfortunate, because if I give you an example, have you ever known somebody who was anxious and their anxiousness was so bad they got sick to their stomach, they wanted to throw up? And then they started focusing on the stressor or the thing that was causing them to be anxious. So now you got cognition. And then when their thinking's involved, now their behavior starts to change. there's a spiritual component to all of that. So connecting all that together is helping the person to get back to that. So that would be the main thing that I would say.
Can I interject something here, Conrad?
Of course.
I'm pretty simple. I'm a United States Marine, so we keep things as simple as we can. I equate it to a vulture ministry. My job is to sit up in the corner like a good vulture, to wait for disaster, to swoop down, love on them, help officers and their families know that we care about them, go back up in the tree, and if I do that right, eventually they start looking for me. And then that's when they invite me into their life. And as a guest, I'm real sensitive about going into people's lives like I would be their houses. And then in doing so, I just turn around and love on them, ask good questions, be a safe place to process stuff in confidentiality, hopefully give some pointers that help. And if I do a good job on it, then I'm invited into the deeper way. And so eventually I'm a part of the team, if that helps.
Can you give any kind of anecdotes to how you've seen that work in a practical way?
Yes, sir. I mean, if we're out there and, you know, if you go out and ride-alongs are one of the primary tools of law enforcement chaplains to get to know officers because you're going into their world. You know, they clean out their office, they let you come in the front seat, and then you get a chance to see them and all they go through. And so one of the things I do is I try to look for the things that they're doing really well. And I affirm them in that because it's not a profession where people are patting you on the back. It's not like firemen where they're, you know, grateful you came for something. And so to affirm them, I'd send them notes, encouragement, texts, you know, tell them, hey, you did a good job in this. And then as we get to go through things, I affirm them. And eventually, as they get to know me, I get to know their families. And they may test me with a couple of questions here or might give me some juicy morsels to see if that's going to leak out. But if I keep things in a confidential nature, and then eventually that relationship as it deepens, and I ask a lot of open-ended questions, and I get to, you know, find out some of the challenges they have, once in a while, they may ask me for some advice on a particular area of their life. I'll give them a little nugget, not any more than they need, and what they ask for. And if that works, then they come back for more. And so we deepen a relationship. We go through critical incidents together. You know, it's as a chaplain, you're right there in the front seat. And so you experience a lot of the same bitterness that they do walking alongside them. And that means everything to them. And out of that relationship's where you start deepening a relationship. And then, you know, that combined with a proactive nature, Ken mentioned some stuff that's important. You know, we do a lot of proactive training and help them to understand it. We understand their world to a certain degree. I've worn the uniform for a season. I'm the United States Marine. There's a lot of things about that. And that those deepening relationships are how do we connect and start to care. Mm-hmm.
So in your organization, you know, what percentage of people that are actually chaplains have had law enforcement experience? And is that an important factor in someone becoming a chaplain?
Well, I don't know the percentage per se. I mean, there's a number of our officers that were officers and wore the uniform for a season, decided as a way to come back and minister. But we're all going to get experience in one way or another. You know, the point is there's no shortcuts. As a chaplain, you have to keep your mouth shut. You have two ears and one mouth for a reason. You need to listen. You need to be non-judgmental. You need to try to study and grow and eradicate your ignorance to realize that you're in the way. And if you do that right and have a deep humility and a display a deep care and concern, then you'll go through life with them and you'll learn as you go and you'll have a lot of shared experiences to build relationships. Because the law enforcement world's full of death and destruction and angry people. And as a chaplain, you'll be making death notifications. You'll be there at critical incidents. You'll be there when everything goes south. And that relationship, by being a ministry of presence and support and encouragement, develops into a deeper measure. And that's one of the big challenges in reaching and being an encouragement to the profession. You know, clinicians do a great job as far as in their area of expertise, but if they don't have a relationship, then that's a challenge. Peer support units do a great job and when there's a relationship there. But if they didn't have a good relationship prior to them becoming peer officers, then there's challenges. And so the whole ministering to law enforcement is predicated on relationships. And so anyway, that's kind of, you know, what I've seen happen and work.
Yeah, we basically walk with them from what I'd say cradle to grave. So from the time they enter the academy all the way up through and including the after of retirement and development of the relationship with them as they go on their career, issues will surface during that time. And what our heart is to be selfless and sacrificial and to love on them, and for being trained chaplains, and that's a key, we understand the issues that may come up over the length of their career. And when they begin to surface, our role is to help to mitigate that and to be somebody, because of the relationships, that's trusted and that has credibility and they understand where we're coming from, to be someone that they could basically dump on in confidence so that they can not have it get buried and become, if I could say it this way, cancerous in their life and start to grow to the point that it starts to cause issues on a personal and or a professional level. So the ride-alongs in the patrol cars, the sit-alongs, the dispatch, the walk-alongs in correctional facilities and things, that's the opportunity that the chaplain has to walk with them in the development of the relationship. So, and it could take 1 or 2 years before they feel comfortable with us, because they, we understand that. So it's important that we understand the culture and we get it. And we know
say,
how
you know,
to be support.
You know, law enforcement tends to be pretty cynical and suspicious. And, you know, there's probably better words to kind of describe that. But I know in my experience, in doing ride-alongs, and it starts to even affect me. I remember I was doing a ride-alongs working on a film about the opioid crisis. And so we were, you know, I was with a drug interdiction team on I-70 looking for cars hauling dope and things. And you begin to, you know, these officers began training me as to how to identify these cars. And so now I'm driving along with my wife and I'm like, that car there, they got dope on them, you know? So you begin to have that sixth sense. So, and I know that law enforcement, they're not really welcoming of outsiders a lot. So how do you get in there and to get them to really trust you? Because it's really a trust issue.
Well, first of all, you better have some integrity because they're good at reading people. You know, I mean, one of the things, you know, a big part of the training is so essential because, you know, we all often say that all chaplains are religious leaders of some type, and not all religious leaders are chaplains because there's a unique calling. So the first thing happens is you better have some integrity because they're going to search you. They can pick up on fraud. They can pick up on false motives. They can pick up on all that stuff. So you better be in there for the right reason because you have a heart and God sent you there. You know, the second thing gets to be is you better walk around in humility, realizing you're in the way. You know, you have to stay out of the way. Third thing gets to be is you better keep things confidential. You know, I've had officers tell me juicy things that they did with their spouses, significant others, because they want to see if I'm going to keep it confidential. So you better keep your mouth shut. You know, when we get in there and we start to get to know them, you want to study their world. You want to ask open-ended questions. You want to figure out how in the world, what is the crazy they deal with? And then you want to affirm them along the way as well. And so then you want to learn how to get training that'll help make you part of the team. And so Ken and I have, you know, critical incident stress debriefing, group intervention, and, you know, there's advanced courses. There's a number of things that I have over 1,000 hours of training, and I'm sure Ken has as much or more. And so we've studied to try to really understand the culture, understand the challenges, understand how we can come along and support and do it in a way that has permission from the culture, represents them faithfully, and then stays out of the way as much as possible.
So what do you do when an officer reveals something to you that is perhaps activity that they've been involved in that's either criminal or potentially self-harming? What do you do with that kind of information? Hey, a quick break here. I want to let you know that we have just released some brand new content in the PTSD 911 film and educational toolkit. This is a powerful resource you can use for training at your public safety agency. The toolkit features the PTSD 911 film, the documentary Risk Lock, and now also includes a brand new video featuring an interview with the co-founder of Ashes to Art, Kathy Sullivan. Ashes to Art was the brainchild of Captain Buck Best with the Behavioral Health Department at the Fairfax County Fire and Rescue in Northern Virginia. In this video, Kathy talks about creating the art program for a local fire company and the impact this has on its participants. This content is only available through the educational toolkit, so visit PTSD911movie.com for more information and to order the film and the toolkit. And now, back to the program.
Well, there's two different categories there. You know, the self-harming one is a delicate balance because, first of all, we have to build a culture from the beginning of the experience. We have to change things at the beginning of the law enforcement experience. You know, the stigma of getting somebody in your corner, the average cop in a mid-sized agency has 188 critical incidents. Mm-hmm. And so we have to normalize the fact that you're going to go through stuff. Mm-hmm. And we have to walk alongside them to say, when you do go through stuff, we're going to be there to help mitigate the impact of those negative things that are happening. But when it comes down to the point where, you know, there's been a couple times in my life that I've had officers that I felt led to call that unfortunately were getting ready to do some bad things to themselves. And so you better believe there's a God up in heaven. You better believe that there's a spirit there of God to help you to know when to call people, know when to talk to them, know when to be with them, know when to refuse to get out of their lives. And so, you know, self-harm's one issue, but, you know, that's something that, you know, the questions always get in there. What we do in law enforcement anyway, are you thinking of killing yourself? You know, you ask them directly. If they are, then, you know, that's one level. Have you decided how and when you're going to do it? If you're answering yes to those questions, then you're in crisis mode. And so we have to do in a confidential way to not embarrass them, to come alongside of them, trying to get the resources without exposing any more than you have to. And oftentimes that's us staying with them. That's us saying, brother, I love you too much. I'm going to be with you. Can we get somebody to take your guns? Can we get somebody to be an encouragement just to hold on to them until we get through this? And so, you know, that's one level. When it comes to illegal activity, I can honestly say, you know, I'm on year 20, getting ready to start year 21 in my agency. And I can't tell you probably maybe one example, if even close to that, of an officer that I saw doing criminal activity. The officers I work with, men or women of integrity, and, you know, there's perceptions on that, but the reality gets to be is they're selfless, doing a good job. But, you know, if that comes to point, then it's, you know, the goal is always to help an officer to, you know, and be encouraged to do the right thing by self-disclosure of any need there. And so my job's not to be the moral police. My job's to try and encourage them to do the right thing, and what they choose to do with it, then it's up to them. And depending on the severity of it, then that's a different set of consequences. Mm-hmm.
So Ken, how long does it take to really get someone that wants that, perhaps they're a pastor of a local congregation and they see a need for, you know, reaching out to their local law enforcement agency? What's that process like for someone to go from pastoring a church to also now volunteering to being a chaplain in a local agency?
There's various different tracks that could happen. With the International Conference of Police Chaplains has a 10-unit basic course. Each of the 10 units are 90 minutes. We have 12 regions throughout the world, and each region has what's called an RTS, a regional training seminar, that the chaplain basic class is offered at. And then after they've come through that and they learn about like line of duty death and ethics and, you know, all the different aspects of law enforcement chaplaincy. And I say it that way because how you train a law enforcement chaplain is different than a hospital chaplain or a mm-hmm. hospice chaplain or district attorney or whatever. So you need to be contextualized to the audience and population that you're serving. So that would be the first step. Once they've taken that, then we have liaison courses, we have enrichment courses, we have advanced courses that are all offered at these 12 RTSs. Each region does one a year. And then we have an ATS, an annual training. The next one, I think, is in July. It's in Philadelphia or Pittsburgh.
July 15th through the 19th, 2024, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Yeah, and that's where all 12 regions assemble, and we have the exact same thing. So for somebody to become, to start the path, because that's all that's going to happen, they need to understand the difference between what I indicated earlier, pastor and chaplain. Mm-hmm. And the chaplain basic is a great first start. It's a great way. I know the sheriff's department that I'm with, we're required every chaplain, we have about 17 chaplains or so, are required to have the ICPC chaplain basic. They're required to have both the individual and group crisis intervention course. And they're put on probation for a period of time. And then I also teach a number of different courses that could take things further. One of them would be applied suicide intervention skills training. It's actually 3 million people internationally have been trained on it. It is what is done when you pick up the phone and call the suicide hotline. Mm-hmm. So it's a two-day class that we walk people through how to actually handle somebody who's having the thoughts of suicide. How do you connect with them? How do you help them to tell you their story and their pain, the pressure and the loss that they are experiencing that has led them to having these thoughts of suicide? And then how can you help them to assist them to not go down that path, as Jim was talking about? So the meta message is in there that the chaplain always walks with in everything, not just suicide, is we care about you. We want to understand what you are going through, and we would like to be able to assist you. Mm-hmm. And just, I think, go ahead.
Well, I'm to piggyback off that. I mean, Ken mentioned a couple activities. The regional training seminars are typically 3-day trainings. The annual training seminar is a week long training. But to answer your question in steps, at least for us as an organization, to join our organization, you have to have some type of be a full member, to have ecclesiastical endorsement. You have to be involved in a ministry or professional capacity for 5 years. Then you have to have an agency that says he or she's with us. And then there's an application process. And then, as Ken mentioned, that's when you start the basic courses. Once you get through them, an additional continuing education units, 25-35 CEUs, then we have a credentialing level. So we have a basic credential, you get more and more training, then you get a senior credential all the way up. And so we have a credentialing process where our enrichment courses, we have 90-minute enrichment courses. And so you just build off of that until you get to professional capacity. And then as you deepen your relationships, and your understanding here, then you're taking advanced courses. And so it's a pretty comprehensive understanding of the unique challenges to the profession and what to do about it. So
what's a good ratio chaplain to law enforcement numbers, in an agency?
Well, I think that's a great question. The reality gets to be is you have to have enough chaplains in order to meet the needs. So, it depends on the size of your agency. I'm currently in an agency that's appropriated for like 143. I think we're down to 120 something, like most agencies were. We're not at full capacity, but we have five solid chaplains that help meet the needs, because you have three different shifts you're on. You have administrative personnel, you have criminal investigative division, all that stuff. And so it's to try to have enough that you can at least have a regular touch point, at least once a week or something, where you're there being around FaceTime, getting to know officers. And so, whatever it takes to make sure that you have a saturation point of connection, from my perspective.
Yeah, our agency has over 1,000 people. Our chaplain corps is between 17 and 20. We have some more that are being interviewed and coming to a chaplain board this coming month and stuff. But we're on call for a week at a time for 24 hours during that week. And we're assigned to different units. We have AORs, areas of responsibility, and people to check in on and to develop that relationship and stuff. So we're written into the policy when an event happens, dispatch will contact the chaplain who's on call for that week. And we respond just like any other officer or detective would respond to the scene for that particular call, which is part of the other education issue. It's not just the head knowledge of understanding the issues, but chaplains also ought to have field training for the different types of calls that they're on and what to do and what not to do. Basically, how can we be utilized as a force multiplier or a tool by the department to support their mission? So if I'm in a patrol car and we get a domestic violence call and we report, the deputy may say, I want you to take care of the abused and the children while I take care of the abuser. So they use us as a tool on their tool belt so that they can get their job done in operation mode. And then our primary purpose is to take care of the people that are in the agency and their families. Mm-hmm. So they have an opportunity to discuss, based on the relationship that we have built and the trust, if the call that we were on was something that had an impact on them in a very informal and relational and conversational way, they can talk to us in confidence. Mm-hmm. So they don't carry it with them and have it get worse later on, because mm-hmm. it starts to build up and become a cumulative stress issue, that all of a sudden that one thing happens and now they're starting to go down the drain. We don't want people going down the drain.
Right.
We want them to be resilient.
What's a typical average day look like in practical terms? You know, you drive over to the police department. What does that look like for a day of you spending a day with them?
Well, my current responsibilities with this organization have kind of dampened that. Been in a healthy day back in the day. For me, I spent a lot of time at the station. So I was there full time. I raised my own support. And so, you know, we're blessed to have three of us in our department that have raised full time support just to be there and try to on a regular basis. So for me, you know, I go in the office, keep the radio on. If there's any critical thing that goes down, something like that, making contact with the ship sergeant, whoever, see if they need me. Yesterday I was in. We had a DOA, you know, dead on arrival, went to make a death notification to the next of kin, was there to support them until they got support network in, may bump into an officer down the hall, talk to them about a personal issue or encouragement by that, may address a shift briefing, try to get the shift briefings and say, share a word of encouragement, conduct training on a regular basis. As an organization, we have, we work with spouses, new hires. And so we have a spouse academy we do once a year. We do training with the new hires there and help them understand what's coming their way. When things were healthy and I was there on a regular basis, we did shift trainings on a monthly basis. And then critical incidents, we have critical incident stress debriefing. If it's a, you know, significant critical incident involves children, mass casualty things, you know, something significant, officer injury, things like that. Officer involved shootings, we come in there. We're a part of, you know, being encouragement there. You know, it's just a matter. It's on demand. It's like I mentioned there, it's just being on standby whenever there's a crisis to try to come down and love on them, support them, encouragement. And in between, you're doing ride-alongs, getting to know their families, trying to, you know, just get a, as you get to know someone, you can tell what abnormal looks like and you can start to intervene. If you build good relationships with spouses, significant others, they're canaries in the mine. And so they can tell you if things are going, you know, starting to be a challenge at home. And so oftentimes you get a chance to bump into them, intervene, things like that. And so it's a whole smorgasbord of adventure there. So, mm-hmm.
So let me ask you guys both this, how important and what do you do and how important is it for chaplains to be healthy? And what are some of those steps that you can do to maintain your own, you know, mental health, spiritual health, that kind of thing?
Yeah. Well, the big thing is, you know, support each other, because, you know, I can call Ken up as a brother and say, hey, Ken, it's been a bad week. Or Ken can check on me if he knows there's something going on. We're working with some national partners on some potential apps that proactively check on each other. You know, for us, we have to have our own spiritual disciplines. You know, it does me no good if I become consumed by the negativity. They need a positive example. And so, you know, for me personally, I have to spend time with God to say, you got to help me. We're in a crazy world here, and refuel me and help me to serve in your strength. And when I go through a bunch of junk, I have to have the humility to reach out to a brother and say, hey, it's been a hard week, or to at least care about each other, that I have a network of close-knit friends that check on me on a regular basis. And so we're just to be vulnerable and honest about that, because we have to realize that. I don't expose myself to any more trauma than I have to. If we come to a situation, my job is not to go see the dead bodies, everything else, if I don't have to. If it's needed, that's no problem. But I try to, you know, my job's to support, bring life and encouragement. And then I have to, you know, I work out with my son every morning. And so we're out there throwing kettlebells together. So that's a big deal. You know, workout's a big thing, you know. You know, just I got a great family support with my wife, who understands. And so, you know, it's a multifaceted component that, you know, you got to make sure that your emotional bank account's getting deposits, or else if you keep making withdrawals with no deposits, you'll get bankrupt as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do a lot of things similar to what Jim is talking about. I'd like to add in our agency. We have a wellness and resiliency coordinator that we have this for department wide. And My prior AOR, area of responsibility, was for criminal investigation. So homicide, violent crime, special victims, organized crime, and the crime lab. But recently, I'm taking on a new role. I'm becoming the chaplain to the chaplain corps. So my role now is taking care of all of our chaplains. So they, and I check in on them. So they have, just like Jim was saying, I can give him a call or he can call me or whatever. So that, that relational issue, not an issue, but the relational component of what's core to us developing within the agency, we also ought to be doing that for ourselves. So I kind of break things up when I mentioned earlier about that interdisciplinary holistic team, looking at things from a physical, emotional, cognitive, behavioral, and spiritual dimension. I would add relational to that. So six areas, that's part of a self-assessment that the chaplain ought to be doing on themselves, because we don't want to be bankrupt in any of those areas, because then we're not able to serve others. I'm fortunate, as Jim and I've been doing this for 2.5 decades. I have my bride and I, and I still call her my bride. We've been married for over 40 years now. So I have someone that I have as a confidant that we're able to share and discuss in a loving family. I have a multi-generational home as well. My kids are in their 30s. My granddaughter lives with us. So there's a lot of family support in what I do. And I like Jim was saying, even though I'm a ceremony professor, I'm basically as a chaplain, and what I do is basically as a mission. So I provide all the services as a chaplain to my agency, and we don't earn anything. We're not looking for that. We just want to take care of others as they take care of us.
So I'm curious, your organization is an international organization. You mentioned you guys are in like, what 13 countries. So how does this look like in other countries, other places around the world? How is that the same or different than it is here in the U.S.?
Well, there's obviously, you know, there's cultural implications, you know, so. Sure. Many countries are national police rather than, you know, decentralized authority structure like we have in the United States. And so you may be a national police officer, which has a unique set of nuances. You may live in a barracks, as many countries do. And so your family life's a whole different dynamic, you know. And so there's, you know, we're working our international efforts there to, you know, build them and grow and learn as we go. But, you know, part of it just to take, you know, there's some unique commonality that we have regardless of the culture. You know, ethics are an important, family's an important part of it. You know, human nature and doing bad things to people and having to respond to it, that's a part of it. So it's really a cultural contextualization of everything we're talking about here to try to help support the different cultures are involved in and be an encouragement to them. So we take the indigenous chaplains there and we use them as a sounding board to say, how can we better serve you? You know, so.
Yeah. On a practical example, I can give you two. As a ceremony professor, we're in 41 countries and I have students virtually like this, getting their degree programs. And when we're in different countries and we're talking about different issues, that is a unique learning opportunity for us on a virtual basis. So for example, I was in Africa and Zambia, and there's 15, 16 million people in the country. There's one mental health hospital in Lusaka, Chinama Hospital, that had 6 clinicians.
Wow.
And I was there training them on suicide intervention, and the clinicians had never had that training. I had the military involved. I had the police involved, and I was doing this for Living Works, which is out of Toronto, Canada. They're the author of the suicide intervention that had the 3 million people I was mentioning. And when we talk about suicide there, they think that there's a spiritual dimension to it. They think somebody needs to go to jail, call the police. They think that you can catch it as a disease. So if they can afford to get people to the hospital, they'll drop them off and say, we brought you a patient. They won't come back for them. So they had to be repatriated. So if we're teaching about suicide here in the country, and I go into the schools and teach 14 and 15 year olds how to identify their friends with thoughts of suicide, how to get them to go with them to get help. And then we train the teachers and the counselors on what to do at that point. So if I take our school system here, they don't have the same school system there. Mm-hmm. They don't have the same response there. So the infrastructure is there. So we have to translate and culturalize what we do here in the state to contextualize it to their country and their population. So there's a lot involved mm-hmm. on this on the back end.
And we also have a lot of our instruction. For instance, we had a Haitian delegation last year. We had Creole French. So our annual training seminar had a whole French segment of it. We have Spanish translators. So we try to do what we can to, you know, interpret things like that. Mm-hmm. So to
kind of describe your organization a little bit, what do you guys do? You have a convention, you have a conference. What kind of things that can people expect there?
Well, we're a training and support organization, so we're divided up into 12 world regions. Those 12 world regions have regional directors. We have area reps that are often, you know, represent a state or a state broken up into several places. And so your membership with the International Conference of Police Chaplains exposes you to a network of individuals that have a level of expertise, can help glean from, grow from. We have regular training. Our big thing is training and support. So our big efforts are we're training professional law enforcement chaplains through dynamic education and support is what we're trying to do. And so, as mentioned before, we have day trainings, we have regional trainings, we have annual trainings. And so training is a big part of it. But then as you get to know and build relationships, you have individuals who have life experience, you know, and you can come alongside. And if you have a, you know, all the time I receive a text from someone that says, hey, we just had an officer involved shooting. What do we do? You know? And so I can sit there and take my experience in that and try to share with them and glean from them. And so it's a network of individuals that you build deep relationships with, and you get to know each other, and you do this journey called life together, and they understand because they're doing the same thing you are. And so there's a deepening of relationships there that's just a beautiful thing.
So if there's a chief watching or a captain or someone in leadership at an agency and they don't have a chaplain there, what's a good first step for them to kind of look for a chaplain?
Sure. Well, I invite you to go to our website is www.icpc4cops.org. So icpc4cops.org. There you'll find a number of tabs on, you know, making the journey. You know, what can a chaplain do? How do you start the process? How can we help you? As an organization, we'd love to come alongside you and wherever you're located, introduce you to our area or our regional directors and area reps. They can help walk with you to, you know, explore what it looks like to have a chaplaincy program. What are the benefits? What are the criteria you're looking for to look for individuals who may be interested? And what's the training process?
So final question for both of you guys as we wrap up here. What motivates you to get up every day to do the work that you do? Because this is really hard work. So what's your motivation?
Well, for me, Conrad, it's something that I think we don't talk about in the discussion right now. It's the why. You know, police officers, if you look at the founding of this country, it's kind of interesting for me, and I'll get around to I'll tie this together. But you look at the founding of this country, I went back and I thought, I wonder what the average age was the founding fathers who wrote the Declaration of Independence. I found it was 42.6. Mm-hmm. I went back and took the average age of the founding fathers that wrote the Constitution. 42.9. So we basically had 43-year-olds. They took on the most powerful military in the world because they believe in a concept called liberty. And so, you know, you look at our Declaration of Independence as we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they're endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, driving their just powers from consent of the governive. Those words preached to me, Conrad, that in the American system, there's a God in heaven who gave rights to man. There's a threat of those rights. Those tasked with addressing that threat are a group called civil government. And the enforcement mechanism of civil government, it's who? It's law enforcement. So the question is, what's the nature of the threat? Well, I turn around and I use an illustration. I say, imagine when you were a rookie cop, you're having more fun, it should be legal. And 16.7 years later, the average cop ate a gun last year. And so do you have the same type of clientele at the beginning you have down the road? The same mad, sad, and bad people, the same my kid won't go to school calls, the same domestic? Sure you do. Do you have the same less than perfect leadership? Sure you do. How with one set of circumstances can I have more fun that should be legal, and 16 years later I'm eating a gun with the same circumstance? What is that? Well, there's a spiritual battle. And so to answer your question, for me, is I'm trying to help the culture to understand exactly how that happens, to understand what it is that takes their head out and loses their joy and gets to the point of hopelessness. And so my motivation every day is I work hard to develop resources, Ken has as well, and as an organization, we have resources can help the cause. I developed a course using Sun Tzu and the Art of War, and I use it as a backdoor way to show you how you get taken out mentally. And so what keeps me going, keeps me in the fight, keeps me in the trenches, is I believe in this profession with all my heart. I believe with all my heart that this is one of the hardest times in American history. But I believe with all my heart that one of the solutions to this problem we have is a two-pronged approach to it, that the religious institutions, churches, everything else need to figure out how to help teach people to be self-governing. But at the end of the day, if the blue line doesn't hold the blue line, then we fall. And so my motivation every day is to wake up and let them know that you guys are on a heaven-sent mission. There's a God up in heaven who wants you to be victorious. He put you here for such a time as this, and there's answers to the challenges you're experiencing, and I want you to be successful, and I'll do anything I can, and we as an organization can do anything we can to help you be victorious.
Hmm. Yeah, how do you add to that? That's the heart of every chaplain and stuff. There's evil in this world, and our police and first responder communities are what I would call, and Jim actually has a organization, they're the warriors on the wall. And every warrior needs to have a support system. And I just believe there's been so much of a disconnect of the way we're created. Everybody has a spirituality. Everybody does. It's what gives meaning and purpose to your life is generally transcendent. But when we start talking about the issues, you know, I'll talk with people of faith and leadership, and they're very much from whatever their faith tradition is, that's how they move through things. And I talk with somebody who's on the other side, a lot of times mental health, and this is a broad generality, but they'll deal with the physical, emotional, cognitive, behavioral, and there's this disconnect between that and the spiritual. That's not how we're made. And my heart is to help both sides to see how do you come together on the bridge for the warriors that are on the wall that we are serving and help them to process based on how they process their life, not on how we see things. It's not about us. We're on a journey and they're on a journey. And there's an event that happens that brings our two paths together. At that event, we are joined by the content of the event, but we don't know the context of their life. And that's where the relationship comes in. So my heart is at the educational, institutional level, seminaries. This is what we're doing to equip people before they go out, being proactive before they go. And for those that are already in organizations like the International Conference of Police Chaplains, who are dedicated to having trained chaplains to make a difference and to be there for those warriors on the wall, I think that that's can have a profound impact and something that is very honorable. The challenge that we all face is a lot of organizations may not perceive chaplains that are trained in the correct light, and therefore they don't utilize them. And I think that's sad.
And just to add to that, Conrad, just for definitions here, because I know we're in a kind of hot button topic buzzword culture here, but when we say the word warrior, G.K. Chesterton said the true warrior fights not because he hates what's in front of him, because he loves what's behind him. We believe with all our heart that one of the most honorable positions is go out there in harm's way on behalf of a public that needs you to stand on their behalf. And, you know, that whole thing, if I could piggyback one little rabbit trail here, and I don't want to take up any more time than you want, but, you know, I think it's important that we understand some simple concepts. You know, when Ken and I look, Ken has a Jewish roots in his life, and you know, and so I come from a Christian tradition, but regardless of whether it's Christian tradition, the Jewish a perception of things, or a Muslim possession of things. In Christianity, we have a simple concept where Paul, talking in Romans chapter 13, says all the commandments are summed up in this one rule. Love your neighbor as yourself. Love does no harm to its neighbor. Therefore, love is the fulfillment of law. And whether you like my Christianity or not, that other orientation, if you think about it, does a number of wonderful things. If I'm an other-oriented leader, then I lead in a way that's different than a self-centered leader. If I'm an other-oriented cop, then I serve my community and different than a self-centered cop. And if I'm an other-oriented person and there's a God up in heaven who can make a difference in my trauma and drama and can give me tools so I can help care about other people, then there's a redemptive factor of my trauma that can be used to make the world a better place. But if that's not true, then suddenly I'm forced with just a personal loss and no ability to cope with it. And so I say the spiritual dimension that Ken and I are speaking of is essential to leadership. It's essential to service, essential to mental health. And I think, you know, just really having some good, honest discussions about that and why you're out there as a cop and a reason to wake up every day, because the average cop that committed suicide in the last several years has been 43 as well. And so we look at the beginning there, 43-year-olds pledging their lives and their fortunes and their sacred honor, and 43-year-olds taking their lives in the most powerful nation on earth. And what is it? It's evil. And we can help make a difference. So I just appreciate you having us on.
Yeah,
absolutely. Well, and I'd just like to add one thing to what Jim was saying, that passage that he talked about actually goes back into Deuteronomy, and it's called the Via Hafta. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. And that word for love there is a selfless, sacrificial, other-focused love. Mm. And love your neighbor as yourself is the same type of love. So when I said earlier about being selfless and sacrificial, we are removing the term selfish and walking in selflessness and being there for the service of other people. That truly is the heart of a chaplain. Hmm. So I also want to thank you.
Yeah. Well, this world can definitely use a little more love. That's for sure. And so I really appreciate what you guys are doing. I appreciate what your organization is doing and for what you guys are doing for your agencies there locally. Thank you for being on the program today. Thank you for sharing your insights. And I look forward to sharing this with the world. And hopefully we can bring more love to the world through the work that you guys do.
Well, thank you for all your work, Conrad, as well, sir. I just appreciate you, Karen and Sharon, and making a big difference. So God bless
Absolutely.
You.
God bless you. Thanks.
Absolutely. Thanks, gentlemen, for spending time with me today on the podcast. And thanks to all of you who have taken time to listen, watch, and especially those of you who have left a review. I really do appreciate it. And if you haven't left a review, please do so. I want to hear from you, and I want to be sure I'm bringing content to you that you want to hear, and your reviews help. And remember, you are not alone. If you need someone to talk to and don't know where you can turn, you can dial 988 for help. Be sure to tune in next week for another interview with an amazing first responder leader. Until then, be well, take care of yourself and those around you, and go out and do something great in the world.